Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments during the broadcast, please feel free to email me at bonkay@AOL.com, that's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E, @AOL.com. Before I announce my special guest tonight, I would like to just mention that our upcoming healing weekend is only a few months away. It's going quickly at the end of April, and it's already January, and people are filling in because it's the best weekend of the year for women who need to heal. This weekend is going to take place the end of April, and we're going to be right outside Washington, D.C., we have women coming from throughout the country. It's going to be a weekend of bonding and sharing and learning and healing, because that's the whole purpose of the healing weekend. If you would like more information about it, or if you would like to be on the mailing list, or if you want to come to the event, you have to write to me at bonkay@AOL.com or go to my website at gayhusbands.com. and click into information about the healing weekend, and I'll be happy to send it to you, and hopefully you can join up with me and some of the most wonderful women of the world. It is the most special weekend of my year because I'm with women who are just like all of you, wonderful women who need to heal. And while we're talking about healing, I have a wonderful guest who is kind enough to come back here time and again to help us, Dr. Morgalis Fjellstad. Dr. Fjellstad, thank you so much for coming back tonight.
Well, Bonnie, thank you so much for asking me. I always enjoy speaking with your audience.
You know, I'll tell you how I got to meet Dr. Fjellstad, for those of you who are new and listening, or if you're older and listening, that's fine too. But I had a wonderful member of my group, and we got together one time. She's from New York. And she was going through a very difficult time healing from the relationship with her husband. And we were in touch for a couple of years, and she's a wonderful, wonderful woman who became a great friend. And she said to me, you know what? She told me one day, you'll never believe this. The reason I am doing so much better is because I found a book. And I said, you found a book that made you that much better? And she said, yes, I found this book. And she said, you have to get this book. And she gave me the title, Stop Caretaking the Borderliner Narcissist, How to Get Out of the Drama and Get On With Your Life. That's the first book by Dr. Margalis Felstad. And I ran out that day and I ordered the book because I thought if this book could change one person's life so drastically, and this young lady will tell you, it was very drastic, the change, because she just was so stuck and couldn't understand why she couldn't move on in her after relationship. Because for many of us, the relationship, even when it's over, it's not over because of the fact when you have children to raise, you have to have some kind of interaction there in almost all cases. So how that interaction goes depends a lot on how you're viewing it or looking at it. And she said that your book, Dr. Felstad, was able to help her cope with how she had to progress with the rest of the years that she was tied in with her ex-husband. So that's why I was so excited when, you know, I first made contact with you that you would come and help other women. Have you gotten much of that same response from other people about that book?
Well, actually, one of the most common responses people give me is, you're talking about my life. And there's just a sense of really identifying what's going on, because so often when you're in a relationship with a narcissist, you end up being consumed by fear and obligation and guilt and anxiety, and you just don't know what's true. You don't know what you want anymore, because the narcissist just keeps hammering at you about what they want. And my second book is a step further, and it's called Healing from a Narcissistic Relationship, A Caretaker's Guide to Recovery, Empowerment, and Transformation. So in that book, I outline all kinds of steps that you can take to really start healing when that relationship ends, or even before it ends.
And after the last time you were here a few months ago, several of the women who bought your book after our show wrote to me, and they said they just loved the second book even more than the first book, because they were at a point of their lives where they understood the narcissist. You know, there's more and more information coming out about narcissism, but they were kind of stuck in the muck and not knowing how to move ahead. And they said there were so many different ideas you had in here, and it's not just a matter of explaining about healing, it's activities that you can do. You know, every chapter that you have is packed full with information. But for instance, I just want to talk about one chapter for a moment, like rebuilding self-confidence, which I think is such a big need for so many of our women after coming after a destructive relationship. And in this particular chapter, if you don't mind me just reading a few things, it says, building up confidence in yourself helps you have the strength and courage to face all of these changes in your life. When you are fearful and unsure of yourself, it's much harder to make a long, strong, positive decisions than you need to make. Self-confidence is rebuilt by actions and attitudes. You need to have a new positive experiences that will naturalize old bad experiences. It helps you to identify your strengths, go back to doing things you love, and have an enthusiastic support team. You know, one of the things that you say is to call on your inner strengths that I think a lot of us have forgotten about in these marriages, that we forget who we were before these marriages because we're so lost in ourselves from these marriages. And you get some wonderful ideas about thinking back to your childhood and things that you've accomplished. So here it's like making lists of your strengths, you know, and you list so many of them that people, we forget about these things, you know, because we have so little regard for ourselves after these relationships. So I think that's a wonderful thing to do, right?
Absolutely. You have to get back in touch with who you really are, not who the narcissist says you are. because narcissists tend to project their negative feelings onto you, and then it gets all confusing about who are you and what are your strengths and abilities. And at the end of each chapter in the book, I have a list of questions to get people in touch with who they are and around the topics. You know, what are your talents and abilities? What interests have you forgotten? What encouraging statement can you be saying to yourself instead of the negative things that you may be hearing? So it's really designed to really give you the tools to actually rebuild and move forward.
One of the things that you say in the beginning of the book that I think is so important for women to understand, when you're talking about when you've been with a narcissist and all of a sudden, you know, they leave you and you say, shock, this is not the same person. At the beginning of the relationship, the narcissist was charming, warm, and affectionate, often witty and confident. Yes, you probably saw his or her arrogance, self-absorption, and moodiness. But those things seemed fleeting, or you thought they were something that you could help him or her overcome. The narcissist had probably seen through a number of relationships which he or she probably described as awful, horrible, or crazy. You may have thought that your love, loyalty, kindness, and sympathy would guarantee that the narcissist would never think of you in those terms. But in spite of all you have given, here you are being rejected and rebuffed anyway. In addition, you may feel that somehow this is all your fault. And I think this is such a powerful opening in this chapter, because so many of us do blame ourselves. We think if only we were better wives, especially when these men, you know, that we are married to, you know, we have a double whammy because they are gay. And sometimes they go off into multiple marriages to make you really think that you're crazy. You know, they'll marry again and again. You would think that they wouldn't do that, but there's some that absolutely do that. And then you feel even less adequate because you think here's someone that's able to make it with them and gay wasn't, you know, so much an issue, or maybe they're not gay with them. You know, people are very confused about gay as if it were a fluid changing thing with men, and it's not. But, you know, you just feel that you're at fault. And do you think that's normally the feeling with the narcissist, that a lot of times people feel that they're the ones who are the fault and not the narcissist?
Oh, absolutely. And I strongly see that narcissists put a lot of energy into blaming their partners, implying that there is something wrong with you, or directly saying you're not good enough. And if you start believing their delusions or their excuses that they're using to get out of the relationship, rather than the reality of the fact that they're actually gay and want out of the relationship, then you can get very confused about who you are. And it's very important to have, I think, a support system around you of people who can give you accurate feedback. So I start with everybody and saying, build up your support system, the people who love and care about you and support you, and be listening to what they have to say rather than what the narcissist has to say, because the narcissist has an agenda in wanting you to feel bad so that they can feel better.
Many of us have husbands who are narcissists or ex-husbands who are narcissists. How does this affect the children? You know, what bearing does that have on the relationship with your children? And how do you deal with that with the kids?
Well, narcissists enjoy being around their kids when it's fun. And then they tend to forget about the kids when they're off having their own fun. And they can often convey to their children the same feelings you've had yourself, that child just isn't good enough or smart enough or interesting enough for the parent to reliably be there for them. And children are very liable to thinking everything that happens is their fault. So I think the non-narcissistic parent needs to be very aware of that, and balance that out so that the child has a better idea of who they really are.
In your opinion, do you think that women who come from parents where there's narcissism are likely to repeat that in their own relationships because that's their sense of what's normal?
Well, a lot of them do. A large portion of people who have one or both parents who are narcissistic often then use that as their model for picking a spouse. On the other hand, some people who come into these relationships had lovely, wonderful childhoods, and that it never crosses their mind anybody could act like this. So they're really dumbfounded when they end up in a relationship like this.
I think that in many cases that we don't even recognize it when we're growing up, because children want, you know, love their parents. They want their parents to love them with all their weaknesses and flaws. And I think a lot of it is learned behavior, that that's what you think things should be or the way it should be, which is why I've learned that there's so much abuse in relationships by people who have been abused themselves, because it is a repeated learned behavior. So at what point do you think it takes till somebody realizes, you know, there's something wrong here? And do people really realize that, or do they take on that same personality?
Are you talking about children or adults here, Bonnie?
Well, when you become an adult, do you recognize that these are traits within your, you know, parents? Like, for instance, I had a father who had a lot of sociopathic behaviors, and, I mean, he was really off the wall, but I loved him. So when I was growing up, you know, he thought he was doing funny things, and I thought it was funny, but it wasn't really funny to other people. And for a long time, you know, I thought that was normal until I got much older and realized this is something wrong with this thinking.
Well, right. We think our parents are normal. And as we grow up and then get exposed to other parents and other adults, then we start to see patterns. One of the reasons I wrote the first book, because it talks so much about recognizing those patterns, is to help people realize that they really are in this very strange relationship. And maybe they hadn't really realized that because they grew up in that kind of environment and now they're in a relationship that way. What they do know is that they're depressed and they're anxious and they're uncomfortable, but they don't know why.
Uh-huh. And I think change is always possible if you want to change. It's just whether or
if
not
you want
to.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely right. And if you're willing to do the work. And one of the dilemmas with narcissists is they typically don't want to because they're already getting everything they want.
And
so why would they bother to?
Exactly.
Go ahead.
Someplace else, and they don't find it from you, right?
That's right. That's right. And then it typically you end up feeling like there must be something wrong with you or you're not good enough. But it really has to do with the fact that narcissists can't really reciprocate and give you equal love back. And if you are wanting that from them, they often head somewhere else to get into a relationship that where that's not a requirement, where they can just get what they want without having to do any work on themselves.
One of the points you make in your new book is something that's been a discussion in my support group pretty recently, like 20 minutes ago, is about revenge, self-condemnation, depression, and fear. And you say this is what I call the dead-end feelings. They are likely to pop up as you make your way through this challenging and confusing times. These are the feelings that will make everything you are going through harder and lengthier. The seeking revenge may temporarily take your attention off of a skewed belief that the narcissist is somehow winning, but it is only truly feel satisfying to people who are vindictive and bitter. And, you know, this is something that comes up that I think that when we're angry, and when there's repeated actions on the parts of our ex-husbands, or husbands, that a lot of times you are seeking vengeance. I'm not, you know, too proud to say that I certainly was in those early years. That changed, of course, as, you know, I got stronger. But do you think that this is a normal reaction people have in the beginning of a relationship ending? How can I get back, or how can I do? Look how miserable he's made me.
I think that's very, very common. In fact, for people who, wives who have been really strong caretakers, I think it's good to go through a period of time of being truly, deeply angry and wanting to get back at him, because it gives them strength and energy. And if you are really angry at somebody, you can say, well, I'll show you. And that helps you move forward in your life. But if you get stuck there and 5-10 years down the line you're still angry, it means you're still engaged emotionally with that person rather than moving on with your life.
And that's what I say to our women. To be angry is a healthy way to be in the beginning, because it shows that you are fighting back. But if you allow that anger to just continue on without dealing with it, and I've seen this happen too, not too often, but in several instances, people not only, they move from anger to bitterness. And what I say is I think that anger can be healthy for you, but bitterness is just hurting you. Am I right in thinking that?
Absolutely right. Bitterness eats away at your own sense of self and at your own energy. Because bitterness requires you to keep thinking about that other person. And what you really want to do is move on and start thinking about your own life and new relationships and doing the things that bring joy and love into your own life.
Mm-hmm. I think when I've seen women just get stuck, no matter what they don't try very hard to get out. And that brings me to another part of what, something that's so, you know, important that you say. You have a chapter about healing self-esteem. And you're talking here about you may have been victimized, but you don't have to be a victim. And that's so true, because I tell that to our women, that, you know, we have been victimized, but the fact is I look at us as victors, not as victims, because I think that's part of your mindset, that you're a victor because you're able to overcome this, and you have to look at yourself that way. That you're able to be strong, you're able to be whole again. And you said you may have thought the narcissist was going to make your life wonderful, and now you have found out it's just the opposite. You can still remember the good times, the feeling of everything going just right, of being the sole focus of his attention. That is a heady feeling, very addictive. But the narcissist has two sides, and you just don't get one side. You always get both. You did not cause the narcissist to idealize you, or did you cause the narcissist's current hostility, blame, and rejection? Those behaviors are entirely under the control of the narcissist, not you. Stop now taking any responsibility for the narcissist's actions. Begin paying attention to your own behaviors and focus on making choices about what you need and want to make your life better. Taking action helps you move out of the feeling of being a victim. And then you say, even though you have felt victimized by the narcissist, you do not have to feel like a victim or act like a victim. Try changing your label of victim to the word disappointed. It's amazing what this change can do and how you think about yourself and about your current situation. And one of the things that you do is you give some self-talk here about instead of feeling like a failure, where you say, I'm a failure at relationships, which many of us do think in the beginning. And instead you say, the way to express disappointment, the relationship didn't work out the way I expected, which sounds much better than I'm a failure, right?
Absolutely.
And then when you say, no one will ever love me again, because a lot of times these men say to us, well, you'll never find anybody who will love you the way that I do or as much as I do. I mean, they're quick to throw that in their sixth sense of what love is. And you have to say, I'm sad that John doesn't love me, but I know that my friends and family love me. That you can't make it like it's your personal rejection or your personal failure. Is that what you're trying to express in these chapters, in this chapter?
Absolutely, because narcissists tend to want to create an image of you that it's your fault. And they often do say, no one will ever love you like I've loved you. The truth is, narcissists really have very little ability to love. They can give attention, they can act admiring, and they can put you on a pedestal, but then later on they take you off. And if you really want to get emotionally deeply close with someone, narcissists are just not able to do that. But they blame it on you, and they project it and say it's you that's the problem. So you have to, when you're leaving or dealing with one of these relationships, you have to do a lot of talking to yourself to rebalance those delusional messages that the narcissist is putting out.
And that's why I think part of it is retraining yourself in the way that you're thinking, which is what you're doing in your book. And you give the difference between discouraging remarks, encouraging remarks. And I think just self-talk and positive talk is really an important part of the healing process. Am I correct in saying that?
That's right, right. The way you talk to yourself. And, you know, you can get the narcissist's voice in your head, and you can think it's your voice. But spend some time. I encourage people to spend time separating out. Is this a thought you have believed before you met this person? Or has it only occurred since you met this person? And you may have had some of those beliefs before you met them that there's something wrong with you because that's what you got in your early years in the way you were parented or experiences you had then. And, of course, then you have to work a lot harder to change those messages because they've been there a long time. But we have great power as human beings to change what we say to ourselves. Most of us want to go and change how we feel. And that's really hard. That's really hard. It takes a lot of work. But one of the steps in changing how you feel is changing what you say to yourself. And you have complete control over that. You know, you may have old habits, but you can break those habits.
And you give a whole list of ways to break them. Maybe you could talk a little bit about this one task. You talk about one way to do this is to draw a circle and cut it into four wedges. And it says in each wedge, write a feeling that you are having right at this minute. Maybe you talk a little bit about this, how to do this particular activity.
Well, yeah, I do this with clients on a regular basis. Often when they first come into a session, I'll have them write down the four feelings that they have. The thing I've found with having four feelings is that very often we think we only have one feeling. Oh, I'm so angry. Mm-hmm. But also you have other feelings. Oh, I'm so scared. Oh, I'm so hurt. Oh, I'm even relieved. And so oftentimes when you get four feelings, one of them will show up that's not quite like the others. And having four gives you a broader perspective of what you're actually experiencing. And that gives you a better sense that it's not just all anger. It's also hurt. It's also sadness. It's also relief. It's such a mixture of feelings. And that helps you to understand yourself as a full, whole human being, not just as one thing.
Oh, that's such a great activity. Another thing you state, and this is a little hurtful because I know that I'm like this sometimes, but it's about letting go of winning and losing. And you say winning and losing only matter in relation to someone else. In this case, the narcissist, does she get more money than you did? Does he ever get more time with the kids than you wanted? Do you now have to work longer hours than you want? Did you have to move when you didn't want to? You think of yourself as getting what you want, and you think of yourself you win if you get what you want and you lose if you don't. And when you let go of trying control outcomes, you will feel better in the long run. The narcissist is all about control, getting what he or she wants, looking better than you, being more successful, having a better life. You will always feel like a loser when you compete with a narcissist. That was really an awakening kind of thought, but it's really true, right?
Oh, I think so, yes. Because narcissists literally are all about winning and losing, looking good to everyone. And they're going to put lots more energy than you're probably willing to put into it. And as long as you're fighting and comparing yourself to the narcissist, you're still engaged with them. And the whole idea of healing is to quit being engaged. Quit caring about what they think. Quit caring about what they're doing with their life and focus on what you're doing with your life and the time you're spending with your kids and the house you're living in, where you know the narcissist is back there and they may be a parent to your children, but you don't have to care about them and what they think about you any longer, because that's not what your relationship is if you're not together anymore.
And one of the points you bring out, and I laughed when I read this, is because this happens to so many of our women. He sends emails and photos to show you how happy he is in his new relationship, that these are designed to make you feel like a loser. The only way out is to let go of comparing yourself in any way to the narcissist and quit caring about what the narcissist says or does. Because you're absolutely right. You know, when our women get these pictures of these men with their new men smiling and happy, and they're sitting home raising the children, working extra jobs, or losing the house, you know, it's very painful.
It's
and the other point
yes,
you make is not to... I'm sorry, go ahead.
It is very painful, and it's designed to make you feel bad because you didn't give them what they wanted, so they're going to prove to you they can get it somewhere else. But I say, you know, in the long run, if this person is a narcissist, they're going to do the same thing to the next partner. And so ultimately, you ought to feel sorry for that new person because they're going to go through what you're going through now.
Exactly. It doesn't get any different even if they have a male partner. It's the same story. You know,
correct.
In fact, many of our women bond with the male partners because they've been in the same shoes. Also, you
exactly.
say try not to worry. Yeah, exactly. I was always a bonding factor for my ex-husband's men. Anyways, try also not to worry too much about what the narcissist says to others about you. People who know and love you will already can tell the narcissist's opinion is off base. People who don't know you well but who are important, like your children's teachers, neighbors, members of groups you belong to, judges and mediators, for instance, need to get a chance to see who you really are. I know that's really difficult for some of us because to start with, as you know, as caretakers, most of us, you know, we don't like to toot our own horn and to make ourselves look better, especially when somebody's knocking us down because we just feel the victimization is continuing. When we're trying to do the right things and then people already have preconceived notions of us from our narcissistic husbands, how do you handle that?
Well, I think you have to learn to stand up for yourself and let people know who you are. Introduce yourself to the teachers or the people that are important. Let them know what you're going through. Tell them the truth about what's going on in your relationship. You may feel like you don't have a right to share personal information, but if you're getting divorced, if you are ending that, your partner is ending that relationship, you don't have any obligation to take care of their feelings any longer, and you don't have to be spiteful, but, you know, saying, you know, yes, we're getting a divorce. Tom is gay, and that's been very hard on me, and I'm having a hard time. But I think it's important for whatever, you know, whatever you want to talk to them about. And just do it matter-of-factly, not with anger, not with bitterness, not with sarcasm, but just as a matter of fact. It's very empowering to realize that you have a right to speak about your own life and tell people what's really going on.
I tell women it's not our secret to have to keep. You know, you don't have to go and shout it from the rooftops or put an ad in the paper. But if you need to tell the people who you're involved with or your friends, you know, many of us are told by our ex-husbands, do not tell anyone. It's only going to make things worse. And that's how they manipulate it. They're living a gay life, but we're not allowed to tell anyone. And I tell women that's
right.
ridiculous, right?
It is ridiculous, absolutely. You have total right to talk about your life and what's happening. And if that also shares this person's information that they don't want, think about how much they've shared about you that you didn't want or that was a downright lie. So you don't have to keep caretaking a person who has left the relationship and treated you badly.
Can you repeat that just one more time?
You don't have to keep caretaking someone who is leaving the relationship and has treated you badly. It's not your job. By being the good person and always being strong and wonderful and never telling anybody anything, it doesn't make you a better person. It means that you're alone and no one can even know what kind of support you need. You need to be reaching out for support, and then that will mean that you're going to need to share some information.
I only made you repeat that twice because I need people to make that their daily mantra now. Thank you. That is so true. I think if they
yes.
heard it twice, they can write it down the second time. But it's true.
I hope so.
I hope so, too. Caretakers too often feel ashamed, at fault, and responsible for the end of a relationship. You may want to hide and not tell anyone what's happening, or you may find yourself suddenly spewing out all kinds of horrible anecdotes and confidences to people you hardly know. Neither of these approaches will be beneficial. And you say start
yeah.
sharing what's going on in your life with a close friend or family member who you trust. You may have never told anyone about the odd, cruel, tactless, and insensitive behaviors of the narcissist. You may have hidden this part of your relationship because you were confused, embarrassed, or humiliated by what was going on. How about when people come up to you, I don't know if you run across this, and you know that somebody that, you know, you're with a horrible narcissist, and afterwards people come up and they say, how could you possibly leave him? He's such a wonderful guy. Because I have that happening to a lot of our women. They all think they're wonderful because they're able to, right?
Narcissists put lots of their energy and attention into appearance, how they appear to the rest of the world. And you can very well say, I am sure he is very delightful and charming with you. However, you weren't married to him. And my experience as his wife was entirely different. And you have a right to say that.
Uh-huh. I think
that's
that
what I mean about
intimidated by that, and they feel like they're going to be judged. Because, and that's once again falling into the whole point with the narcissist, right? You're still letting him control your life.
That's right. You have to get over the fear of being judged because everyone judges you anyway. You just don't know it most of the time. When you're getting a divorce, sometimes people will be willing to tell you their judgments. But the fact is, it doesn't matter what other people think. You know, their opinion of your marriage or your relationships. You have a right to tell them what you feel and what you think. And if they still want to hold on to their old beliefs, they might not qualify as a friend any longer. But there are a lot of people in the world who would like to be your friend and who would be supportive and caring. And you need to be looking for those kind of people. Because when we're caretakers, we have a tendency to also a lot of times find friends that we take care of rather than getting anybody to, you know, reciprocate and take care of us.
And it's true. And one of the things that you also mentioned in your book, have you ever thought about how and why the narcissist picked you and you picked the narcissist? And I think that we are easy bait for a lot of these men who are narcissists because of the fact they're, you know, many of us are kind of broken to start with, not all of us, but some. And when somebody charming and wonderful comes into your life, and of course we don't know that they're gay because how would we know in the beginning? And
right.
it's easy to gobble us up and make us feel loved. And this is what happens to a lot of our women. You know, they find this when, you know, these guys do this love bombing on you and you just feel totally wonderful about life and you're optimistic and you're in love and you could never imagine anything being different, but it just never stays the same. And
that's just,
you mentioned also that if you're in a relationship with a narcissist, you now may be aware you have other narcissistic relationships that you haven't even noticed. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Right. That's what I mean by you may have picked up friends. You may be working for a boss who's a narcissist. You may look back in your life and see there was one of your parents or someone else who was close to you who had these same qualities, and you were used to it. It just seemed normal. So you didn't notice there were no red flags that came up for you when you met the narcissist that you're with now. And you're right. Caretakers tend, I think of it often in the same way as being very vulnerable bait. And I think narcissists test you at the beginning of the relationship by pushing your boundaries to see if you'll stand up for yourself, if you'll disagree with them, if you'll say what you want, if you put your foot down about things you don't like. But people who are caretakers tend to be very agreeable, easygoing. They want to, you know, please the person. And so they give in. And if you're giving in at the beginning of the relationship, what are you going to do later when, you know, the house and the car and your whole financial and emotional life is tied up with this person? Then you're going to give in always. And you can end up feeling like a doormat. And that's a terrible feeling.
And if you don't change that, then it will happen in your next relationships too. And that's the whole point of being able to understand this and learn to heal from your books that you keep bringing out, that, you know, you're in one bad relationship, but that doesn't mean you have to keep finding the same repeated relationships. And I tell our women, even if your next husband doesn't have to be gay, but if you don't heal right and give yourself the time to know yourself again and to love yourself again, most importantly, then you're going to always accept someone who isn't the right person for you or good enough for you because you don't feel enough good enough about yourself. Would you say that's pretty accurate?
I think that's so true, and I think that's really sad when that happens because you can waste a lot of years on relationships that really don't give you what you truly deserve. And a lot of people who are caretakers don't believe that they deserve that much. And my book is focused on the idea that, yes, you do. You deserve to be treated with kindness and consideration and to be treated gently and lovingly and to have your, as much as you give, you have a right to receive the same amount. And if you give 90% and only expect 10%, you're going to be in another manipulative relationship. You have to get at least down to 50-50 to make it, you know, the next relationship really feel like what you want it to be.
Let me just ask you this, Dr. Felstad. I always say that I'm guilty of this also. And even though our marriages are over, I know that I was always being drawn back into being a caretaker for my ex-husband. I mean, I could go for a long time and not be one, but then I would ultimately, those feelings would come back. You know, we shared children together. We shared a life together. He needs me, and he was needy. And, I went back again, and I'm not I'm not proud of it. I just had to follow what I had to do. Other people say, oh, you were so brave. No, I wasn't brave, and I wasn't caring and loving. That part of it was me because I am a caretaker. How do you stop doing these kinds of things? Because I know that a lot of times, you know, they are destructive patterns, but our women go through this.
Well, I think that one of the main questions when you're about to help your ex-spouse is to ask yourself, do I really want to do this? Or do I feel I ought to do this? And if the answer is yes, I want to do it, well, then go ahead. Why not? It's something you want to do. But if the answer is, well, I'd feel guilty if I didn't, or I feel like I ought to, or people would, you know, condemn me if I didn't, then you don't really want to, and you should not be doing it. This person is a grown-up, and they need to be standing on their own, and they need to take care of their own lives. And if you're taking care of them, then who's taking care of you? You need to be taking care of yourself so you can also take care of your children and move forward in your life. If you're spending energy on taking care of an ex-spouse, then you're still married, and they're not. They're off in their life already. And you're still pretending that you're married and you have an obligation there, and you don't. So, again, that self-talk is really important. You have to talk to yourself sometimes with a pretty strong voice and saying, hey, this isn't our responsibility. We need to stay out of it. Let them figure it out for themselves.
So much easier said than done sometimes. I'm the first to admit it. But also, once you're in a divorce situation, let's say in general, can you draw borderlines? I mean, can you set the tone that I'm willing to accept this and not accept this? A lot of times that, you know, I really do feel like with the gay situation, these men want to drag their new boyfriends into your life when you don't really want them there. You know, you haven't even had time to heal. And these men are trying to make this one big happy family when you're not happy at all. But unfortunately, you have children you have to share. And, you know, there's so many difficulties for our women in many of these cases, especially when, you know, the husband's involved with somebody new and they don't want to tell their kids that they're gay. You know, a lot of complications arise. So do you have to accept the situation of having the boyfriend come or the male friend or the husband come over or the husband's husband come over? I mean, can you draw any lines?
Absolutely not. No. You know, it's now your house. You can decide who comes in your house. You can decide what activities you go to. I think, you know, you have a right to make those separations. It's your life now. And, you know, if your spouse is still lying to your children about whether they're gay or straight, then depending on their ages, then, you know, I think you need to be talking to your kids about that too.
Yes, I've learned over the years, and it took me a lot of years to learn this, not in my earlier years, that secrets destroy families regardless. And there's all different ways you can do things in a positive manner and not have it have a negative impact. But to keep hiding secrets, it can be so destructive, you know, especially your husband's secret. And especially when they're living a life that your children are seeing and not understanding.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then your children feel like they can't trust the father, and they can't trust you either.
Exactly.
And you definitely want your children to be able to talk to you about whatever is going on for them so that you can be their supporter. So lying either directly or by omission is not going to help the situation.
Right. And then I always say that it's giving a negative message about homosexuality, that it's something we have to hide and be ashamed of, where you know, it's not something that people have a choice in. So you may not be happy about it, but you know, bottom line is you don't want to have to hide it and make it seem like it's something dirty. I mean, a lot of our women, not the majority, but a lot do have children who are gay, including me. But if you keep giving the message it's something to keep a secret, then it's always going to be a hidden shame within your own children. So tell us about
this. And it's really one of the, it's really one of the reasons that you didn't know they were gay when you married them, because they were ashamed to say that. They were ashamed to have that life.
Exactly.
So I think it's very important not to pass that on.
I agree totally. Let's not keep it a dark, hidden secret like there's something wrong with it, and approach it in a positive way for the children's sake. But also, can you talk a little bit about your online classes for people? Because this is something that I think will be so wonderful. for women who can't be with you and can't be out where you are.
Right. over the years, I've designed a group that is focused on helping people stop caretaking behaviors. And I've put that into an online class. It's available at caretaker.digitalchalk.com. And it's a PowerPoint presentation with audio information that I've recorded so that you hear my voice and I'm telling you about the PowerPoints. It also includes a workbook that has over 100 exercises that the person can do to get insight into their own caretaking behaviors and to practice new things to say and come up with ideas of new behaviors so that they can stop those automatic caretaking behaviors.
That's wonderful. And also, this would be on your website, correct?
Yes. Yes, there's a link on my website. And also on my newsletter. I put out a newsletter once a month, and there's a link in that newsletter for the
right.
class as well.
And when this will go up in a minute, you know, on Blog Talk Radio for people listening to it. I have your address there. It's margalistherapy.com. They can just write to you there and see, you know, they'll see your website and also sign up for the newsletter. Which I love the newsletter. I look forward to it every month when I see it. First, I say, I can't believe the month went so fast because I'm getting old.
Sometimes I think that too.
And
it's time to write another one.
Right. But I think, goodness, I have something great to read today. That always makes me feel better. So I greatly appreciate
it. Oh, well, I'm glad to hear that. Yes.
Yes. And I do share your information with our women as far as your newsletter. But you can get it on your own. You don't have to wait for me to reprint it. You can go and get it by going to the website. And also, your books are available on the website. And also, if you go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm. And then you can have the names of the books. They'll be on this listening while people are listening. So I just want to tell you, Dr. Felstad, you have been wonderful to me over the last few years in sharing your information. And I think it's so important for people to recognize that if you can get just moving on with your life by reading these books and listening to Dr. Felstad's words, I am always learning. I'm always learning techniques from her, and that you'll really be helping yourself by buying these books and practicing the exercises in there and coming out more whole than you are right now. Would you say that, I'm just curious, one last question. If you have children who you believe to be narcissists, how do you deal with that when they're growing up?
Well, as a parent, probably the biggest thing you need to do is learn to set boundaries and limits with those children and follow through. What you are likely doing is giving up. They'll badger you to keep doing what they want or sneak behind your back and do it, and then you don't do anything. And so then you reinforce those narcissistic behaviors. So teaching your children that other people have feelings, asking them to respond to other people in polite ways, setting limits and boundaries with your children can make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. Do you see that happening in families, that at a young age you can actually see a narcissist, or is there a special age you think that it emerges more so than others?
I think it tends to emerge more in adolescence, and it's sort of natural for all adolescents to be quite narcissistic. But if you let them get away with those behaviors as a teenager, then you're
mm-hmm.
much more likely to see that they have them as an adult. So, you know, being a conscientious parent is a good point, and a loving parent at the same time, not punitive, because being punitive with narcissists doesn't work.
You think this could be a genetic predisposition?
Yes, I do. the manual for mental illness that therapists use say it's about 50% inherited. So if they have one narcissistic parent, your kids have about a 50-50 chance of being narcissistic. It doesn't mean all the kids will be that way, or, and narcissism is kind of a spectrum, so you can have a medium amount or a huge amount. All of us need a little for self-preservation and for a sense of self-esteem. But when it comes at the expense of other people, then we're looking at real narcissistic behavior that's getting in the way.
So a little bit of narcissism is okay. Once again, which is really like caring for yourself, tooting your horn. You can let people know when you've done good things, getting self-feedback and positive feedback from people. It's all part of who we are. You know, we all need that kind of, to a point. But when it gets out of control, and when it's the red flags that are waving in your face, when you see someone who you know is all about themselves or all about him, as we say, then you know you have to do something, because one of the things you keep emphasizing is that this does not change. Am I correct?
That's correct. I've seen a few, very, very few narcissists who realize that it's harming people that they care about, and they're willing to put in the work. But most narcissists, really, they're getting so much of what they want, attention, they get to do everything their own way, all of that. It's so reinforcing that they just don't want to bother changing.
Well, that's the final words of wisdom for tonight from Dr. Felstad. It's not going to change. It's not going to get better. It just stays the same or gets worse. And the more you feed into it, the worse it's going to get. So you have to save yourself. You can't save the narcissist, right?
That's right.
So Dr. Felstad, I want to thank you so much for coming back and reminding our women how important that their lives are. And I think that the lesson gleaned from tonight is that you can't sit and wait to change the narcissist and think that whatever you're going to do is going to make it any better. The only thing you can do is work on yourself to get yourself stronger, so you don't have to be around someone who's always going to be dragging you down. Because that person's not there to build you up, he's there to build himself up. And he'll never make you feel that good about yourself except at moments when you'll just take that crumb and pretend that it's, you know, a cookie instead of a crumb. You know, you're never going to feel good when you're living with someone who can't give you the feedback that you need or respect you as a person or show you the empathy. I think these guys don't have much empathy. Am I right in saying that?
That's right. They have a little empathy, although interestingly enough, I think they mostly have empathy for animals rather than people.
Yeah, the truth.
Yeah.
For sure.
But, you know, everybody deserves to be in a relationship where their partner cares about them, loves them, and has empathy for them. So you're worth it.
I think they like those animals because, you know, the animals are always happy to see them. They don't realize they're narcissists, right?
Right.
You have immediate gratification from some dog running up to you or a cat licking your face. So it's easy to love the animals. You have a built-in audience. So that would make
Absolutely.
A lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for starting our year off wonderful, and I hope you'll come back to us again in the spring to remind us how important we all are. And
thanks,
once again,
Bonnie.
Thank
it's
you
been
so much,
good
Dr.
being
Felstad.
Here.
All right. And to all our audience listening, good night and love to you, and keep in touch, right?
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.